G'day team, hope you're going great. So this is part two of the conversation that I had with Perry, Perry Varnakis. We're talking about food and all that stuff, all that great nutritional stuff. It went for longer than planned, that conversation. So we thought we would dissect it into part one and part two. This is part two. Enjoy. Now I need a free consultation from my training partner, the crab, who's got a lot of issues and will not go and see anyone. Everyone listening who knows the crab, please don't tell him about this, just between us. So he always gets cramps, and he gets cramps in the middle of the night that like nearly tear his calves off the bone, right? Mm-hmm. Or have you ever had those, Pez?
Maybe many years ago. I remember where you just wake up and your hamstring's spasming and you've jumped out and you're screaming and your partner's thinking, oh my God, he's dying. I'm going to get his bank details before he goes.
Yeah, exactly. So the crab's always getting these. So what's lacking, or perhaps what's lacking that's getting him? Because when his muscles cramp, it's quite the fucking event because they're quite big, right? If the cramp, if the crab goes into spasm, get the fuck out of the way.
Yeah, he'll knock your flying, that's for sure. Well, look, with him straight away, those four micronutrients that we mentioned, there'd definitely be some form of an imbalance in there. And that's what we're looking at. So the reason why it happens in the middle of the night, you're laying down horizontal, your blood pressure's changed, it's reduced. And like you mentioned before, hydration levels have changed as well. So could be that he's lacking in calcium and magnesium, which are two vital areas that sort of work with the muscle itself, and then sodium, potassium. And the sodium, potassium are more effectively working in the muscle during the day when you're active, whereas the other two, or all four together, work in the middle of the night. And that cramping effect that you get, it's not a good thing, especially when you cramp at night when you're sleeping. You know, there are other health issues that I'd be concerned about as well. And we know he's had a bit of a heart condition as well too. So, you know, I'd be looking very closely at his diet and looking at how we can look at his micronutrient balance with what he's doing, especially when he's training. One of the big key things that I do with athletes that whilst they're training, I make sure they have a very high dose of electrolytes with a very fast-acting carbohydrate such as dextrose as a drink whilst they're training, just to keep that electrolyte balance effective whilst they're training. And we think that we need an electrolyte balance when you're hot and sweaty and running and riding a bike. We forget that in the gym, your muscles are working hard when you're lifting heavy weights or in dynamic movement. So therefore, you need to keep those muscles working efficiently and effectively, hence why the electrolyte drink as well.
Which one do you, because all my listeners right now are going, Harps, ask him which one.
I do not represent any companies whatsoever. Let's just, right, I'm not funded by anyone in any way, but the Gatorade Endurance, very hard to find at the moment because everyone's snapping it up. This is the one that Deakin University gives the big tick of approval as well, as one of the most effective electrolyte drinks. It's a powder that you mix up with yourself. And then I just get a plain dextrose powder from any of the supplement suppliers and mix that in with the drink. And depending on your needs and muscle mass will determine how much you want. So I usually put for myself, I weigh just on 90 kilos and I put 20 grams of carbohydrates in there. Someone like the crab, it could go up to 40 or 50 grams, depending on how active he is and how heavy the weight he's lifting at the time.
Now, I also don't want to throw the crab under the bus. So everyone listening, this is just between us. He has been known, and by being known, I mean about five nights a week to eat a 200 gram. Yes, that's right. A 200 gram jar of crunchy peanut butter with a spoon sitting on the couch. Now, I'm no expert, Pezza. I don't have a master's in nutrition, but I suspect that's not optimal.
Well, it depends what type of spoon he's using, Craig.
If it's a tiny, tiny spoon that takes a lot of energy to get it out.
Oh, well, there you go. You've balanced yourself out perfectly and you'd be fine. And the thing is, does he lick the jar at the bottom? Or does he get his tongue in there? That's my only concern.
Oh, fucking hell. Do you know what he does, though? Ah, fuck it.
Well, look, let's go back to that. On a serious note, if you look at that, the peanuts that they use out of that is a roasted nut. So therefore, all the good fats are taken out of that, full stop. That's the first thing you're going to find that's missing.
Hang on. What? So you're telling me that roasting nuts makes them not as good?
Sorry to say that to you, Craig. Yes, that's right.
Fucking hell. What about my roasted almonds in the morning?
Oh, I know. I've heard the story. I didn't want to break the jar with you on that one or burst your bubble in regards to that. But
What?
yeah,
What?
I
Sorry,
know.
you're breaking up. You're breaking up. I can't hear you.
Hello, Planet Earth to Craig. Planet Earth to Craig. We have the almonds for you.
Fucking hell.
Mate, get yourself some biodynamic almonds and eat them and watch the difference. You'll be going to the toilet more regularly, like you said you wanted to go.
Yeah, well, no, I poo like a champion. I don't want to brag, but I'm fucking great at it. But okay, so if I'm going to change my almonds hesitantly and reluctantly because I'm a big baby, what ones do I get? Do you soak them or whatever that is?
Oh, look, some people like to soak the almonds and they soak other things as well. But let's say they're just soaking the almonds. That's to remove the phytates that are in the almond to prevent the absorption of certain minerals and other little, let's say, chemicals that go into the body itself. That, again, it becomes an individual thing. But having a biodynamic nut, which means it's organic, it's been picked at a specific time, well, it's meant to be a little bit better for you. I just like having plain, simple nuts that haven't been exposed to many chemicals because you've got to remember a nut is a condensed form of energy. So all the nutrients that are in the soil are going to get drawn into this nut and compressed as an energy source. What then happens is if you've got a lot of chemicals in that soil, those chemicals are going to be condensed and packed into that nut as well. So that's why I prefer when I'm having any form of nut to make sure that it's organic so that the soil itself hasn't been loaded with pesticides or even interestingly enough, years and years ago when they used to lay the soil down with high levels of estrogen so that the little bugs couldn't get pregnant and keep making new bugs. So
Really?
yeah, we used to lay it out with estrogen many, many years ago. I know, it's scary stuff.
All right. Looks like I'm going to have to do something about my nuts.
Yeah, well, I can help you with your nuts, Craig.
Oh, well, just pop over, champ, and we'll do a workshop.
Okay, you're on. Well, look, with
Everyone.
the crab with his peanut butter jar, the other thing to act as a preservative, they're going to have to put a lot of salt in there. And the quality of that salt, the sodium that they're putting in there to act as a preservative, I guarantee you will be crap. So therefore, what's going to happen is he's now just getting one mineral in there, a sodium at a very, very high level. That's causing his imbalance and hello, cramp at night.
But other than that, it's a good idea, right?
Well, look, what you can do is if you get the jar and you just look at it, that's fantastic. I like to believe the process of osmosis, just let it slowly absorb into the body by looking at it.
All right. While we're talking about salt, tell us about salt. No, just tell us about salt. Good,
Okay,
bad.
look.
Can we add salt to food? Do we fucking not? What's the deal?
Oh, mate, add salt to food. This is the biggest fallacy that I've heard. I hate this when people say, stop having salt. It's no good for you. Well, it depends on what you're eating. If you're eating a lot of processed food, jars of peanut butter, all this sort of stuff that's got hidden salt in there, and we call it hidden because no one's read the bloody label, right? Because if you read the label and look at the comparative figure of 100 grams and you look at how many milligrams of sodium is in there, then you'll realize how much crap you're ingesting. Add to this processed food, like processed meat, let's say bacon, etc. That sort of stuff, you're ingesting that much sodium that by the end of the day, you've hit 3,000, 4,000 micrograms, which is way above what the national recommendation value is, which is meant to be at the upper limit of 2,000 milligrams per day. We've been told that the average intake should be about 1,000 milligrams a day, which is about a good teaspoon of salt. Now, if you're someone like myself who likes to eat whole foods, so what we call low human interference foods, so like your fruit, your veg, meat, fish, chicken that you cook yourself, that has no salt in it whatsoever. The sodium content is minimal. So you need to add a good quality salt in there that has all the micronutrients in there to help bring those levels up. If you don't have enough salt, you suffer through a condition called hyponatremia, which means that your body won't be able to hold enough water and and keep the cells hydrated to make them work effectively. So I like to use Celtic salt. And the reason why I use Celtic salt, that's got iodine in there, which is great for the hypothalamus, but it's got all the other trace minerals and ions that you need for the salt to work effectively in the body itself. Stuff like, let's say, the Himalayan salt, which has got a pink color to it. The reason why I don't like using that or recommend it with my clients is that if something is pink, means it has high levels of copper. And when you contact companies that import that salt, some of them don't even know the copper content of the salt. You get the comment that I got a while ago was, please Google the answer. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding. I've just rang your company to find out because I think this is off the clock because there's no nutritional label on there. Even I think about 2 months ago on the news, there was one specific type of Himalayan salt that was banned in Australia because of the copper content being that high, causing other issues in the human body. So they've gone, this is a toxic level of copper. Let's get rid of it. So,
It's so
yeah.
fucking interesting how much we don't know. I mean, how much we don't know about things that we just readily shove in our body. Now, do I need to travel to Ireland to get this Celtic salt?
Well, it depends if you want to do a bit of a song and a dance in the process, yes. Or you can go to any health food store and ask them to give you the unrefined, grey-coloured Celtic salt. And it's readily available. If it looks white in color, that means they've refined it to make it look more like salt. You don't need it. It should be gray. It should be slightly moist and just sprinkle it over your food. Do
Does it
not be
taste
scared.
the same?
Yeah, it's like, you know, if anything, it doesn't taste as salty.
Right.
Yeah.
So what am I getting? Unrefined
Celtic
salt.
salt. And it's gray in color and it's a bit moist as well.
Wow. Well, sounds like clay, let's be honest, but that's okay. I'm actually going to get some because there's a health food joint 500 meters from my house.
Well, you can put them
That's
on your biodynamic nuts, Craig.
like I could salt my nuts and fucking who knows how I'll be. But anyway, enough about my personal life. Melissa, where are we? Fucking, I'm having so much fun.
We're just short of an hour.
We're just short of an hour. Pezza, what's your time like? Have you
Mate, I've
got.
got all the time in the world for you, Craig. How could I
Right.
say no to you? How can I resist you?
Well, fucking hell, it's not that hard, trust me. Let's do another 15 or 20, and we might turn this into parts one and two. Melissa, are you okay? Do you like everyone? I'm just editing and producing as we go. Melissa, I know you're the actual boss. Is that okay?
That sounds like a great idea to me.
Thank you. All right. All right. Tell us about gluten, because apparently everyone in the world is gluten intolerant. Firstly, what is gluten?
Well,
Is every second person in Australia really gluten intolerant? And what's the deal?
okay. Well, gluten has gotten that big rap again, the big sign up that says, right, if you want to function effectively, let's take gluten out of your diet. So that's a little bit of a panic point on my perspective because of the fact that gluten is just a simple protein that's found in some grains, right? Now, some people do have a gluten intolerance. Some people just get really sick. They get swollen, they have bad reaction to it, they get the toilet, they get the runs. Well, don't eat gluten. That's fine. There's no problem. But if you're not gluten intolerant, why are you avoiding gluten? There's no need to take that out of your diet. It's not going to make you feel better, but it's not going to make you sick as well. So gluten gets a bit of a bad rap. It's a nice little fad that we like to pick up on some people because we know that, you know, there's certain intolerances like lactose or fructose and gluten. So we like to put them all into a category and go, right, we're now going to market this thing and tell people that gluten's really bad for you. And we're now going to make a bread that's full of crap, but it's gluten-free. So eat this. This is great.
Yeah, I'm digressing a bit, but I just thought of something before that came back to me. So thank you for clearing up the gluten thing. I'm pretty sure I'm not gluten intolerant, but I saw this thing online, and I don't want to, I need to be careful how I word this, but how do I say it? How do I say it? So I'm just going to be honest. I'm going to be honest. So I am, you know, I'm sponsored by Max's, right? So I do stuff for Max's, love Max's. But also Max's are very aware that I am, you know, like I will tell what I believe is the truth about everything, which they want me to. And it's like when they do their 12-week challenges, for example, I always say 12-week challenges are great as long as this is the beginning, not the start and finish. So if this
Agreed.
12 weeks is a platform for the rest of your life, fucking amazing. But I was in, or it just came up on my timeline. So someone in the group said, "Hey, I'm just starting out. You know, I'm a newbie. You know, haven't done this before. what supplement should I start with? And I'm like, what? So, and then all these people jumped on to tell this person that they'd never met. They'd never seen this person's body. It was a lady. They'd never seen her body. They knew nothing about her diet, her nutrition, her physiology, nothing like nobody, I'm guessing nobody that was jumping in and telling her what to take has any clinical qualifications or nutritional qualifications. And there's all these people go, and I'm like, oh my God. Like, imagine asking a room in inverted commas full of strangers who don't know you or your body. Imagine trusting them more than trusting yourself when you don't even know what you should take, if anything, right? Now, firstly, what supplements do you need? Well, that fucking depends on what you're lacking. If you're lacking, if you're lacking, the answer is zero, right? Zero. That's what you need. But let me tell you, the other person on the end of that question that you're asking in social media land, he or she doesn't know what you need. And so this idea that, this is a good supplement, we should all take this. Oh, this is a good product, we should all take that. That must frustrate the fuck out of you that people think there's some generic thing that everyone needs.
Well, Craig, you're so on point with this one. I just had this conversation with a new client 2 days ago, so this fits in perfectly. He was taking zinc, vitamin B12, he was taking creatine, calcium, coenzyme Q10. I'm like, man, you really copped it. You're really unwell. What did your doctor say when he looked at your blood test? Said, like, what dosages should he recommend? And he goes, what do you mean, what blood tests? I'm like, well, how do you know what's going on inside your body? He goes, oh, no, I read about it. Coenzyme 10 is good for my heart. Zinc is good for this. And I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. So you're taking all this stuff and you have no idea what's happening to your body. I go, these supplements that you're taking are all synthetically made. And whether they're natural or synthetic means jack shit to me, because you know what? They all have to go through the liver to be processed. So you could be taking guarana and thinking, oh, this is a healthy herb and it's fantastic for you. If you overload your system, guess what's going to cop it? Your liver. It's going to get smashed and smashed and smashed. So when people get their blood tests, the first thing I look at is liver function. From there, we look at all the micronutrient deficiencies, if there's any. And then from there, we determine if you need to take a supplement. My classic is the one that I take zinc during the day and zinc and magnesium at night to help me sleep. And I'm like, do you realize that zinc, high doses of zinc, can actually cause cirrhosis of the liver? It can actually fuck you up. There's no ifs, buts, or maybes on that. Why the hell are you taking zinc? And you're taking magnesium as a muscle relaxant. If you've just had red meat, you know how much magnesium's in red meat? So why the fuck would you take another supplement? So you're overloading your system, you're pushing your body to the upper limit, and then you're wondering why you're getting sick, or when you do a poop, you're wondering why there's blood coming out of there. And you're like, your body is starting to break down. It's starting to shit itself. But you know what? There must be another supplement for that too. And that's what gets me. It frustrates the shit out of me. Like you said, when people come to me with a list of supplements when they haven't tested their body. And when they do test the body and we do find deficiencies and we go, let's alter your diet first to try and correct that. And then from there, if you need supplementation, we'll do that, because some people genetically just can't absorb some food. Then we retest again. So we change the nutrition. 8 to 12 weeks later, we do your blood test. We see where they're at. 8 to 12 weeks later, we retest again, see where they're at, and then supplement if needed. And then guess what? 8 to 12 weeks, we retest again. And that way, it's monitoring. It's like getting your car, putting the dipstick in and checking the fucking oil. And if you don't do that, you just keep putting oil in there. One day, your engine's not going to start. And that's the same with the human body. You keep hitting yourself with synthetic chemicals and crap, whether they be any form of supplementation, healthy or natural or whatever you want to think that you're taking, it's going to fuck you up in the end. It really is.
Wow, you've opened the swearing door in a big way. I couldn't.
Oh, it's made the passion here, mate.
I think I pushed a button. That's okay. All right, now I just want to run a couple of things by you. Now, of course, artificial sweeteners are good for you, aren't they?
Oh, they're fantastic. If you like to be preserved and be a mummy later on in life, they're amazing. I love them. like the really good, because you take them, and then when you die, that necrolysis occurs, and bang, solid, hard, skin will never fail. It'll be great. 300 years later, we can study you.
you can just pop me up in front of my computer.
Yeah.
And you won't even need a taxidermist.
Not a thing. And if we got this recording playing again, I just think you're still around. It's great.
So, are they all shit? Is there a scale, like is Natvia or Stevia okay because allegedly it's from a plant and aspartame's diabolical? Or in your opinion, is it all shit?
Okay, in my opinion, all shit. Just use sugar. Put some sugar in there. It's simple. Why are we scared of sugar? We're so scared of sugar. And so we've decided to find an alternative. We're going to go, all right, we'll get an artificial sweetener. Yeah, look at the other crap you're in. You know what? Put a teaspoon of sugar in your food, be fine. Put a little bit of honey in your food, it's fine as well. It's still a sugar. It's still going to work well, and you'll be fine. Why put a synthetic chemical that may, and I'm going to use the word cautiously here, may cause some sort of dysfunction within your body? Because some chemicals at a certain level can be flushed out. Others will get stored in your fat cell, and others may trigger a response that will cause issues. And one of the biggest things that we're finding these days that are causing issues and treating other conditions in the body is your gut health. So when you're taking chemicals in your body and you're disrupting that gut biome or not having a great variety of gut biome, you're affecting other things in your body. Monash are doing a great study at the moment, and this would fall into your realm, Craig, where they're actually looking at the effects of altering gut biome to treat mental conditions such as Alzheimer's or forget the other one. But they're actually getting some great results from doing that, where they're actually measuring your gut biome and going, let's change your food. Let's put some new biome in there. And look, all of a sudden, you're not depressed. You're getting your memory back. Everything's starting to work well. And that's simple food, no chemicals, no crap.
Yeah, it is interesting. They've spoken about that for a bit, and it's great that they're doing that research, because there is a correlation between the, you know, the stomach brain and the other brain, you know, so to speak. And there is a correlation between gut health and mental health. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes. Tell us about let's go coffee. How fucking, don't tell me I can't have coffee or I'll come over and kick you in your Greek dick.
Oh, mate. Guess what, Craig? You can't have coffee. Come over now. Now, look, you can't have coffee, all right? And I've got some rules with coffee. Try not to get too scientific here, but coffee is a stimulant, and that stimulant charges up what we know called the sympathetic nervous system. The sympathetic nervous system is affected directly with your ability to digest food and will work as an appetite suppressant. So when you have coffee on an empty stomach, you will not feel hungry. So a lot of people get up in the morning, have a cup of coffee, and then they might skip breakfast or they have a small breakfast and they find they've got some digestive issues. So what I like to tell my clients is that have your breakfast first or have your food first. Wait at least half an hour to 45 minutes to have you digested that food, and then have your coffee intake. Get your caffeine shot up in there. But it's then again, we're looking at the, like we said before, the amount of coffee that you're drinking, and especially in one hit. So caffeine has a half-life of what they suggest between 5 to 6 hours. In some people genetically, we've seen that it can even last up to 9.5 hours. So if you have a cup of coffee at lunchtime at 12 o'clock, 9 o'clock that night, you still got half a cup of coffee in there. That will directly affect your sleep pattern. And I've had clients that say, well, I have a cup of coffee and go straight to bed. And I'm like, great, because you're not sleeping. You're passing out and you're affecting your biological clock in how it works by the circadian rhythm of your sleep cycle. So therefore your heel repair section of your body that's trying to slow down to release growth hormone to control cortisol and adrenaline and insulin and all the other functions that are happening in the body have now been altered. And you will ultimately end up in a state of disease and get sick. So coffee, no more than 2 cups a day. The second cup not to be had after 12:30 in that day, and not to do a triple shot caffeine soy latte mixed with a sprinkle of cinnamon on there. It's one shot, maybe two, no more. Because the recommended amount of caffeine that we've been told to have per day is between 200 to 400 micrograms of coffee a day. So, you know, we've got to find a balance. There were some studies done a while ago in regards to looking at the amount of caffeine to have to act as a fat burner. And what we're finding is people were having on average between 4 to 5 coffees a day to actually get some form of fat stimulation, our fat metabolization. And that was only because of the fact it was acting as an appetite suppressant, charging up the sympathetic nervous system, and just the body just fibrillating. The muscles were just going crazy, releasing more energy and therefore acting as a fat burner. The interesting thing with that study was that with women that were over the age of 45 and onwards, where they were starting to go into that perimenopausal state, that they needed 5 to 6 cups of coffee to get the same result. So when we look at caffeine as a fat burner only, yes, it works. But when we look at caffeine on a, let's say, pathophysiological response, the damage that it does to the body is off the clock when you're having 5, 6, 7, 8 cups of coffee a day. So yeah, 2 cups of coffee is fine. Have it before lunchtime. Have it after you've had your meal, and it'll work effectively for you.
Now, that is fascinating. I want to just extrapolate on fat burners and central nervous system stimulants and jump into our pre-workout formulae. And I have an hypothesis, Your Honor, and that is, so the crab, I don't know why the crab's getting a lot of airtime today, but I just, fuck it. Just let's embrace him. So when he died for 17 minutes, the day before he died for, sorry, the day that he died before he got to the gym, I won't say it was a Max's. That's true. I don't even know if they make one, but he had a pre-workout, and instead of taking the amount you're meant to take, which we'll just call the amount X or the recommended, you probably, you know, instead of taking X, I think he took 3 or 4 X, right? So, hey, don't have a teaspoon, have 4 or whatever the fucking measure was. I've never taken it and I couldn't because I have an arrhythmia. But anyway, on top of that, he was probably a bit dehydrated. So then he comes in with his central nervous system just wired because he's had all this shit before he gets to the gym, probably a bit dehydrated because he'd been down to Lawn and drove back in his truck and literally came straight back from there. Then he comes into the gym, warms up, does a few things, and then he does a set of 30 chins. Now, you know how people make shit up in the gym, Pezza, and I'm not making that up. He did 30 full chins, but more spectacular, and by spectacular I mean stupid, than that is he held his breath for 30 reps.
That's good. Was he practicing for like deep sea swimming or?
So I don't know, what was he then? 54. So the 54-year-old holds his breath for 30 chin-ups. He's just taken all this shit into his system and he's probably dehydrated and his blood pressure's now 4 million over 2 million and then falls on the floor and has a cardiac arrest. Mm-hmm. I actually think, and they, you know, when they don't know the cause of something, you know this, but they call it idiopathic, right? Mm-hmm. So like they'll say idiopathic scoliosis. She's got a curvature in her back. We don't know why, right? So they kind of just went, fuck, we don't know why, because there's actually nothing wrong with his heart. He didn't have, his arteries are fine. He doesn't have atherosclerosis or arteriosclerosis. His heart functionally is fine, but he had an arrest. He didn't have a heart attack, but his heart stopped, right? So I actually think he gave it to himself.
It's the peanut butter, Craig.
I rest my case.
It's the peanut butter.
What are your thoughts on pre-workout?
Okay, pre-workout's a shit. There you go. Simple. If they're crap, they're not worth it. They're not worth the fucking money they're made with. The bullshit crap. What I love is when they put all these beautiful herbs and spices that make it sound there's some exotic location in the highlands of the Eilish, you know, exotic Amazon mountains. And yes, this is going to be the ultimate stimulant without using caffeine. And then you read down the bottom, has caffeine.
Yeah.
So that's the interesting part. But with stimulants before a workout, I think it's crazy. If you have to go into a workout and you require such a high dose of stimulation, there's something wrong with your mental attitude towards your training. If you're tired and exhausted, let's try and avoid that. Have a rest day and go in there and train properly. If you want a pre-workout, have some caffeine. That'll get you going. One simple shot, simple, around about 60 to 80 micrograms of caffeine is plenty for you. A while ago, there was a product, I'm not going to mention a name so that it doesn't sort of cause any issues there, but it had a shitload of caffeine in it, had probably about 6 or 7 times the recommended doses of caffeine. And it also had this beautiful product called 1,3-dimethylaniline. Now, 1,3-dimethylaniline is a beta 2 antagonist or stimulator, sorry. So what it does is it actually does help metabolize fats, but it also causes one of the side effects, heart palpitations. This 1,3-dimethylaniline was also used as a herbal ecstasy in New Zealand. So they'd put a small amount in there and take it away. So what happened was when you combine that with caffeine, then taurine, then B6, guess what? You've got a lethal potion there. And what had happened was there were two doctors in America that were brothers that decided to do the crab thing and double dose on X. And what happened was they both ended up in hospital with heart palpitations. They did more research, found out that the problem was the 1,3-dimethylaniline. It then became a worldwide class act to actually ban that product. And, you know, we can't get it anymore. Yeah, it's
Where was that shit sold? Like,
it was sold here in Australia.
But, I mean, you could walk in and just buy it?
Yep, you just bought it. It was in the supplement. Most of the pre-workout supplements jumped on board with this 1,3-dimethylaniline. It was so easily available. And I can't say that the brand name, but everyone knew, let's put it this way, if you wanted to get jacked, you would get by this product.
And now that shit would have killed me in about 4 seconds. Thank God I didn't. I wouldn't use it anyway, but thank God. All right, we're nearly done. Tell us about on the scale of fats, the good, the bad, the terrible, the healthy, and the in between, if there's such a thing, and give us examples of where to find all of them.
Okay. All right. Then, well, fats, I could talk to you about 3 hours on fats because fats is a very complicated thing, and so. We like to use the philosophy of if you eat fat, you'll get fat. So that was the big thing and hence the 98% fat free. That then caused major health issues with people because we think that fat is fat. The same way we think carbohydrates are all the same or all protein sources are the same. Fats come from a varied amount of sources. And when we look at the bad fat, let's say the heavy laden cholesterol, saturated fat in excess, like big dosages, that's when we start to have a problem, right? Because we're increasing calorie intake, it's being stored as fat, we're preventing lipolysis from occurring, all these negative things happen. But there are other fats, stuff like, for example, from my lovely hometown of Greece.
Hang on, just before you do that, just tell us, so saturated fat is found in things
like your steak with the white fat on the outside, not the marble fat. The marble in the meat is actually good for you. The fat on the outside, that's the one we want to watch out for. That's really, really bad for you. So we trim that off. The marble in that fat actually gets converted into an omega-3, which is another fat, which is fantastic for good health and well-being. So when we look at diets, obviously the Mediterranean diet gets the big thumbs up. Everyone raves on about it because of what's in it, and it's the fish and the olive oil. Now, olive oil is a fat. It's liquid at room temperature, and it's predominantly omega-9. So that's one of the good polyunsaturated fatty acids. The other part of that diet is the fact that we eat a lot of fish. And in fish, the predominant fat in that is omega-3, another great polyunsaturated fatty acid. In other food groups like canola oil and that, we find fats such as omega-6, which is the predominant one in, let's say, canola oil or some of these other processed oils. The problem is with that oil is that the ratio of omega-6 to omega-3 is through the roof. So omega-6 is extremely high, omega-3 is really low. And what we've found in the human body through a lot of trials that if your ratio between omega-6 and omega-3 is exacerbated, what then happens is we get a lot of, to make it simple, a lot of inflammation in the body. And that inflammation releases what we call cataclones, and then we start to have a lot of problems within our health and well-being. So we try to keep that type of fat down. But you can balance that out because every fat that we have, like the polyunsaturated fats, still has omega-6 and omega-3 in there. For example, olive oil, which is high levels of omega-9, but it's still got omega-6 and still got omega-3. Another good source of fats is like your nuts, like pistachios or macadamia nuts, which have got high levels of fat. Again, high levels of omega-3, but still got a good ratio of omega-6 to omega-3. So that's the other side of it. Avocados, another really good fat. We all panic. Only have a quarter of an avocado. Why? Have half. Have a full avocado. It's not a problem. Weigh it to see how much it is. How does that fit in with your eating regime? And one of the key things that we'd like to say to people, don't cut out all your fat. you want at least 1 gram of fat for every kilogram of body weight. So if I weigh 90 kilos, let's aim for 90 grams of fat. If you want to go slightly under that, let's say you go 0.8 or 0.9, that'll be fine as well. That's acceptable. But anything lower than that, we then start to disrupt a lot of bodily function. One of the things is all our cells, the outer layer is made of fat. So if that is that we don't get enough good fats in the diet to keep elasticity in that cell, nutrient transfer, and more importantly, oxygen transfer into the cell, it gets disrupted. We start to feel like shit. We start to get aches and pains. We think we've got a virus. And all it is because we've reduced the amount of fats in our diet.
All right. Trans fats.
Burn them. Get rid of them. Make you sick. It's no good for you. It's simple as that. Trans fats are a fat that's been chemically processed to make them the way they are. And the reason why we like trans fats is that, one, they act as a preservative in some foods, and secondly, the taste of them. So if you see something that's got trans fats, and it's quite rare in Australia, if you see something that's got high levels of trans fats, bin that shit. Don't even risk putting that in your body.
All right. I'm holding a gun to your head. And you've got to go. I'm holding a gun to your head, and you've got to go and eat Hungry Jack's burger or McDonald's.
Okay, then. If you eat the wrapper with the Hungry Jack's,
eat the wrapper and throw away the burger. There's more nutrition.
That's it. It's all soaked in there, son. It's already filtered that way. You see, so it's like
you're fucking hilarious. Coffee. You're hilarious. All right. Perry Vanarkas is his name, Pezza, a.k.a. the fucking The Wiz. Mate, we love your guts. We love having you on the show. You'll be back. Tell people how they can connect with you. I know your website's being built. Email you, socials. Give them your home phone number and, of course, where you live, and all the weirdos will be over about 7 tonight.
Okay. Can I give them my bank details as well? I don't mind. That'll be great. Because I've got my friend in Saudi Arabia that's got all this money waiting for me. I just got to finalize the last transaction. It's been really great.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a prince, that dude. So, I mean, totally. How do people connect with you?
Okay. The best way to find me at the moment is either through my email, which is my name. So Perry Vanarkas, all one word, @gmail.com. Or they can jump on my Instagram page, which just type, look under my name again, under Perry Vanarkas, and you'll find me there as Pezzanator. And I've got a lot of tips and hints and food ideas and stories on there about nutrition. And you can also find me on Facebook. But unfortunately, my Facebook page, I've got 5,000 people already full. You can have a bit of a look there, but it's more of a personal blog there rather than anything to do with nutrition. So ultimately, you know, best place to find me is through Instagram. Just log on. Join up, hit the like button, follow my stories, and you'll always find the stuff that comes up there that's always new and up to date.
Perfect. How do people spell Vanarkas?
V-E-N for November, A-K-I-S.
Perfect, and mate.
Perry with a double R.
Perfect.
And a Y.
P-E-R-R-Y Vanarkas. Mate, stay there because we're going to chat to you once we finish. Melissa, have I forgotten anything, you bossy fucker?
You haven't forgotten anything, but I have got a question for Perry.
We've
been going a while, so I don't know whether it's going to too long to delve into.
Nah, he's got great endurance.
I'd love your take on or thoughts on the likes of veganism, plant-based, pescatarian, just different diets like that. Your thoughts
They're great. All right. So look, my view regarding restrictive diets is, let's say, a little bit left of center, in a sense that if for religious reasons or ethical reasons you feel that you want to go through a vegan diet or pescatarian or whatever you want to do, that's fine. I get that. But when you're restricting a food group to create a nutritional guidance plan, you're going to have some issues. And up to date now with some of the vegans that I've worked with and vegetarians, when we go through an intensive blood work and we look at things like omega-3, issues or omega-3, I forget the word for it.
Levels.
Now, levels. Omega-3 levels in the body, yeah. When we're looking at, there's an assessment process that we follow. And what we find is that they're quite low, or there's certain micronutrients that they're missing, like, you know, vitamin B12, or even like the absorption of iron into their body can be a bit of an issue. And that's sad to see. And it's like when I've had, let's say, people that have run restrictive diets and we go to more of an omnivore diet where they're eating everything. And, you know, they might eat red meat once every 5 days. They've seen a difference in, one, how they feel and their blood works as well. So That's my opinion on that. I prefer people to eat a little bit of everything and have a really good balance in their food rather than be restrictive and follow like, you know, a pescatarian diet or a ketogenic diet or, you know, a paleo diet or the Dr. Atkins diet or the South Coast diet. Because all of those, as soon as you hear the word diet, we've got a beginning and an end and it's a restriction and you feel you're missing out. Whereas I like people to eat everything. And, you know, you can eat a little bit of peanut butter and you can eat a little bit of cake. That's fine. There's no dramas. Yep, I'll let you do that. As long as 80% of the time you've eaten really well and you've balanced your body out and you're keeping an eye on what's happening internally. And the only way to do that is to actually go get a blood tester, but not a normal generic GP blood tester. And you need to up an ante and ask for other specifics as well to have a look at thyroid function and let's say thyroid antibodies. So, you know, if you're looking at cholesterol, they have a full breakdown of cholesterol or, you know, even with vitamin D gets overlooked so ridiculously when we do blood tests yet. Vitamin D, now we're finding it's, you know, it's helping control blood glucose levels. We're finding that it helps metabolize fats and it also stimulates muscle hypertrophy, not just for bone density. So doctors overlook it. And the sad thing is in Australia, because the results are now on average, we're finding that the results are lower and lower and lower. The range that doctors are looking at now, instead of being 50 to 250, they're going 50 to 150. So if you're 130, they go, that's excellent. If you're 100, that's fantastic. I get all my clients to try and be between 200 to 250 and they feel amazing and they start to lose weight and they're finding they're eating foods and it's not affecting them. But in Australia, now we do the old slip, slop, slap and we don't get out in the sun. You get a lot of wogs like me that have got dark skin that, you know, reflect the sun and we don't absorb vitamin D as well. You know, we've got to keep it up there. We've got to keep that right. And so when you have a restricted diet, you're going to restrict some form of micronutrient and possibly macronutrient. When you're doing that, it's going to be an issue. The other thing too, with protein, we all think that when we hear the word protein, that it's a complete form of protein. Unfortunately, some proteins aren't the complete amino acid base, or they don't have enough of one specific amino called leucine. And leucine is the switch that turns on the body to create hypertrophy, to make it grow. So with the elderly, when we look at what we call sarcopenia, the breakdown of muscle as we get older, by having good doses of leucine, which is about 3.5 grams, that gets a threshold, triggers a response, and we start to create hypertrophy without weight training, without movement, just through nutrition. So to get 3.5 grams of leucine, we're looking at about 150 grams of meat, fish, or chicken. In supplementation such as pea protein or, you know, another any form of rice protein, especially, which is a crap one, the amount of leucine that's in there is negligible. So you need to have a massive dose in one hit to try and even get close to the right amount of leucine to create hypertrophy. And if you're not getting all the complete protein in there, your body's not going to function effectively. And there's a lot of argument at the moment now where having an incomplete protein in the morning and another incomplete protein at night will combine together and make a complete protein source. There's a lot of argument to and fro on that. And if we know that protein can't be stored in the body, if you've eaten in the morning, those aminos have been utilized and gone. And this is just my opinion on this, that you might find that having another incomplete source of protein at night isn't going to be beneficial. And again, like I said, that's my opinion. I know a lot of people argue against that, but there are a lot of people, a lot of professionals out there that are now saying we need a complete protein source to create longevity, et cetera, within the body itself.
Awesome.
Wow.
You know what we might do with you one day, young man? We might do a Q&A session where we'll just put it out for people to just send in questions. And we'll get you back. Good question, Melissa. Well done. I thought you'd nodded off there.
No, I've been listening intently. It's been very interesting.
Glad I haven't bored you there, Melissa.
Not at all.
Mate, you stay on the call, but thanks so much for being on the You Project, buddy. We love you.
Well, thank you very much, Craig, for the opportunity, mate. Good to see you again, mate.
See you, buddy.